All right, let's do this. Welcome back to Teal Town Conversations, brought to you by TealTownUSA.com. Check that out there for all your pregame, postgame opinions, editorials, and of course, podcasts. Subscribe here on our YouTube channel or on SoundCloud if you're listening there. We do a live postgame every postgame. We do these conversations. We cover the Barracuda and the broader NHL as well, so check all that stuff out. We are on SoundCloud, iTunes, all that good stuff. If it's a podcast platform, we're probably on there. So if you like audio only, be sure to check that out. Also, check out any links in the description as far as merchandise goes, events, all those great things that we do, and like us on Facebook. With all that said, my guest today is David Staples. He writes for the Edmonton Journal. You can find him on Twitter at dstaples. He covers hockey, and he also covers some non-sports topics. He's been there since 1985. He's a best-selling author, acclaimed blogger, and the host of the Cult of Hockey podcast. Welcome, David.
Hey there, Chris. How you doing?
Awesome, man. Appreciate you taking the time to join me here today. It's just after game three here, so we're enough into the series to have something to actually really talk about here, and probably start with game three. What was your takeaway last night? What was your feeling? Because that was a pretty close game, in my opinion.
It could have gone either way. We could be just as easily sitting, like, I'm an Oilers fan. I write as a fan blogger. I'm not a professional sports writer, and I'm guessing that you're a fan as well.
Yep.
So we could easily be sitting here and the roles reversed. I could be a little bit down and you could be a little bit up because your team was up, because that was a very close game. I thought San Jose outplayed the Oilers in the first period, and the Oilers won the last two periods. And of course the game I track scoring chances. And I track a grade A scoring chance as a shot on net from the inner slot. And in this game, it was 5 for the Oilers and 4 for the Sharks. The thing about the Sharks is you had a lot of opportunities from the inner slot and you missed the net. You cannot score if you miss the net. It drives coaches crazy when players miss the net. And you had all kinds of chances, including one right at the end of the game. I don't know who had that open look right in the slot at the end of the game. We muffed on that shot. And Klefbom then got the puck and almost went down. I don't know how he missed the net. That was kind of crazy. But that was a very close game, and it could have gone either way. It was just luck, essentially, chance that decided that game. Although the Oilers, I think, did have the edge in play overall.
Yeah, I thought it was a slight edge to the Oilers, but it was, in my opinion, it was like 51-49. It was so close. And yeah, there's a lot of people who are down today, like, oh my gosh, that was the terrible. I thought it was really, really close. And I'm not gonna panic, but I think game four obviously is going to decide if this is a long series or if this is a over in 5 and done for the Oilers. I mean, game by game, you know, talking about that, we've seen something pretty different, right? So like game one was almost all Sharks outside of a shaky start. Game two was all Oilers, just that was a domination. And then game three here said it's pretty close to 50-50. How do you think it's going to play out game 4, 5, and 6, if there is one?
I do think the Oilers have the advantage going forward, not just because they're ahead in the series, but there's two things that work for them. They're a younger group of players. So these are really difficult games to play in. People are getting banged up pretty good, nicked up pretty good. The Oilers came into the playoffs healthier than the Sharks. And that's, I think that edge would increase actually as the series goes along, because they're younger players, younger people. They heal faster. Secondly, I think the Oilers are the more physical of the two teams. And again, that physical toll starts to take its toll as the series goes along. And I think if there are any players who are going to be intimidated as the series goes along, it's going to be more likely a Sharks player, because the Sharks are a very disciplined and hardworking team. They're not a really hard-hitting team, and they don't really have anyone who's punishing the Oilers. Even last night when they were hitting, like, according to San Jose statisticians, the hit count in the first period was like 5,000 to 2 for the Sharks. The Sharks did hit a lot, but they didn't have any of those really brutal, nasty, punishing hits. And the weird thing about the NHL is crime pays in the NHL. So if you do a really nasty, brutal, ugly, borderline or even over the line hit like Cassian was landing, there's not a penalty in the NHL that usually meets the amount of damage that that does to the opposition. And that was certainly the case with those two hits, which were both borderline. I think he did leave his feet when he hit Couture. There wasn't even a penalty, let alone a suspension. And we see this again and again in the NHL where crime pays. So I think crime will pay for the Oilers as the series goes along. I just think they have an edge going forward.
I agree, especially since the Sharks can't make them pay on the power play, because, you know, crime, the only time crime doesn't pay, it seems, is if the other team has a power play that can, you know, if it gets out there, it's going to score. And the Sharks power play, oh, let's not go there. We've been banging on that drum on our shows all season long. That power play has been terrible.
What's wrong with it, though? I mean, I haven't watched your power play. Like, you've got some player, like, I mean, come on, Burns is a fantastic hockey player. He may be as good at his position right now as McDavid is at his position, and he's running your power play. Is it, and Pavelski can tip the puck. He makes good plays with the puck. I do see Couture and Thornton being injured right now and not being very effective. So why can't you? What's wrong with your power play?
I think injuries is part of it. It's also I think the NHL is shifting a bit. I think you saw it last year at the Pittsburgh Penguins that teams are doing more attacking on defense as opposed to letting you move the puck around. That's always I said the way you beat the Sharks is you make them make quick decisions. You know, you might leave yourself wide open for a big play, but if you force them to make a quick decision, they're going to have a they don't like making quick decisions. And that's really, I think, the difference on the power play is teams are forcing the play. They aren't just letting them pass the puck, unless they're way out on the perimeter. They're not letting them move it around inside.
You got to get on them, and you got to get on Burns. You can't let his point shot through. Yep. So yeah, there may be something to that. And the Oilers PK, they were much more passive during the regular season, I thought. Now they've amped it up and are far more aggressive right now than they've ever been all year long. And that has worked in the last two games.
I would think that's definitely a game plan adjustment they made, because if you watch any team that's been successful against the Sharks in general, and especially against their power play, they don't let them make quick decisions. Like the teams that they've scored on with the power play usually are teams that are playing a very passive box and kind of letting them pass it around and reacting and trying to get sticks in lanes, as opposed to force the puck carrier, get in front of Burns knowing he's going to take that shot. Don't let him take that shot, block it, even if it leaves you vulnerable. Just, yeah, that's really a lot of what it is. So in terms of game plan, I've seen a decent amount of the Oilers games this season. It seems like they are a lot more physical in this series than I've seen them all season. Is that just maybe I didn't catch it before, or have they really dialed that up as made part of the game plan?
They have been physical all year. They've built a team. With Cassian, Lucic, Maroon, Darnell Nurse. It's pretty hard for any team in the NHL to match the physicality, just the firepower that those guys bring. They're all huge men who really love to hit. And the difference between the Oilers this year and in previous years, one of the big differences, there's three or four. One of them is obviously McDavid, but there really are other significant things. So all year long, they've had each other's backs. So if someone gets hit, it's like you hit me, well, you're hitting everybody on this team. We're all coming for you. We've seen that all year long with players like Cassian and Lucic. And it is amped up, of course, in the playoffs, but it's been a part of their game all year long. And when the playoffs started, I had this mixture of kind of anxiety, like, what are we going to see here from this young team? But also a feeling like maybe the rest of the NHL doesn't know what's going to hit them, because the combination of speed and ferocity that the Oilers have when they're playing their best game is pretty breathtaking. I think game two was kind of a shocking game for everybody, maybe for Sharks fans, but also for Oilers fans. We've seen hints of that game, but wow, that was a pretty awesome performance and pretty hard to resist a team like that. I mean, the interviews that we saw with Couture and Burns, Couture between the periods and Burns after, like they looked like they were a little bit shell-shocked, which is unusual for highly experienced NHL players.
Yeah, I mean, Cassian, he seems to be turning into quite the villain for the Sharks fans here.
I can imagine. I would hate his guts if I was a Sharks fan.
Yeah, I get the impression, though, Timo Meier is not making very good impressions on Oilers fans either.
Hell of a player, though. I mean, if he had had been doing more damage, yeah, then it would, then it kind of crosses the line and people start to get irate about it. But to me, yeah, he looks like a very strong young hockey player for the Sharks, and I have to admire his game.
Yeah, he's got at least the mild irritant factor. He's got a few years probably to go before he's a really major factor. But yeah, he's not quite on the Cassian level where Sharks fans right now, he's like public enemy number one. And it's like last night, of course it was him who gets that turnover and scores a backhander that we think shouldn't have probably gone in. Of course it was him, because
it had to be. He can play, though. This is the thing about Cassian. He had a lot of goals called back this year. I think he only had eight, but he had three or four called back and could have had more. He had a lot of problems in his defensive play his first year in Edmonton. He would cough the puck up at his own zone, but he's calming down as a player. He's still bringing that fierceness, but he is calmer when he's got the puck. He's protecting it better. He's finding himself as a player, and he's got a lot of skill and stick handling ability and can rush the puck in. No, that was a hell of an acquisition by Peter Chiarelli. I mean, where do you get a player like that for nothing? We gave up Ben Scrivens, who was in the AHL, couldn't play in the NHL. He's in the KHL for Zach Cassian. I mean, how much would you like Zach Cassian on your team right now? And Chiarelli got him and Maroon. He got both those guys for nothing.
Yeah, it's a lot like Rafi Torres, because Sharks fans hated him until he was here. Then a lot of people warmed up to him because, you know, say you hate that guy on the other team, but, well, Torres is one that even some people they don't like him on their own team because he was a little bit beyond the pale at times. But
some people are like hockey pacifists, and I get that, right? Like I love, like, the, you know, they love the skill players, but I love the skill players, but I also know in the real world of the NHL, the law of the jungle applies, because they don't have penalties that fit the crime. And you need to win in the playoffs. It helps to have those players who go over the line. It just does.
Yeah. To a certain extent, always. And it's like, you have to know when to reel them in if they're facing a team with a great power play, but they are not in this series. So for the Oilers defense right now, you know, game one, they got pretty victimized. There was a lot of chance. I mean, honestly, that could have been a lot uglier than it ended up being. It's like there were a lot of posts in there, a lot of really close calls. Game two, they didn't really seem to have to work that hard because the forwards were just mashing all the Sharks and they weren't even getting close to challenging the Oilers defense. Game three, I thought they were very strong, very solid. I mean, I thought both teams defensively were very strong last night.
They were.
What do you think is going to be more typical for the defense, you know, as far as how they play?
Well, the Oilers have had a couple problems on their defense all year long, they surfaced in the first game. The third pairing was weak at the end of the year. Nurse, Greiba, and Benning were struggling, especially Benning. In the first game, we saw both Greiba and Nurse be over-aggressive, going behind the net, get caught out, leaving the slot open a lot. But in the last two games, the Oilers have given up. They gave up one grade-A chance in game two to the Sharks, which is highly unusual. You know, usually the opposing team gets about eight grade-A chances against the Oilers, and they gave up only four in game three. So this is a very strong performance by Oilers standards. Can we expect it to continue? The one thing in the last, Oscar Klefbom all year long was struggling with his defensive play, giving up too much gap, not strong enough blocking people coming out of the corners. But in the last 5 or 10 games, he turned it around and really started to play well on defense. And we've seen that throughout the series against the Sharks. So if you have both Klefbom and Larson in the top pairing, playing really strong defensive hockey, and I've seen it now about 10 games straight, so I'm kind of thinking, well, this is the new normal. Secker and Larson are both capable NHL players, and then what you're going to have to do, the Sharks are going to have to do, is capitalize on the third pairing, which I think is going to continue to be shaky, and on the power play. That's what happened in game one, and if the Sharks can make that happen in game four, and why not? You could get three goals that way. Then the Sharks will have a chance of winning game four.
Yeah, definitely agree. I say that I keep saying it all. I've said it all season, but the power play. And, you know, we have a lot of people on our show that say that because it's just true. They have to do it.
Change up the personnel, maybe, like put Timo Meier out there. You know, don't go with Marlowe. He's done nothing, right? Like he's old. Like it happens to players, unfortunately. And at that point, you just go with someone else. I know he scored a good number of goals this year, but he's getting probably every opportunity to score. Maybe it's time to change that personnel up. If Logan Couture is not at 100% and he's not doing that well in the power play, take him off. Give him someone else a chance.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things we've talked about a lot is like I understand why they had so much patience with the top group for the Sharks because they've been highly successful for a decade plus. Like that, yeah. It's largely been a lot of the same guys for a long time. And usually, you know, as one guy goes, another guy comes in. So most of those guys have a long tenure on that power play. And it's been a top 10 power play year over year. And this is like the first year it hasn't been. So I get why the patience, but I tend to agree. It's like they need to do something more extreme and just say, okay, it's time to kind of blow up that group. Maybe reunite them eventually, but who knows? And especially the kind of the era ending of Thornton and Marlowe here. How do you feel about our former coach, Todd McClellan, his style behind the bench, how he dictates his lines?
Well, if you had asked me after game one, I would have had a different. I thought McClellan coached the team to lose that game. I thought he was too passive in his coaching. He, for instance, in the third period when. Can't recall who scored, but when the Sharks scored the big goal in the third period in that game, he had Mark. It was a 4-on-4 situation. The Oilers were generating nothing on the attack. So you finally have 4-on-4. Here's a chance to get out there and attack. Well, McDavid and Draisaitl were tired, so you couldn't put them out. But who you should put out is Nugent Hopkins and Eberle, two really strong attacking players. McClellan put out Mark Letestu, who's too slow, and he's in those situations, and Drake Kajula. It was as if he was killing off that time. He had kind of a PK penalty kill mindset in that moment. I just thought, McClellan, you backed off. You weren't going for the win there, and it bit you. So it's going to be interesting to see. He made a key adjustment, though, in yesterday's game where he broke up the lines. I'm in the school that thinks the Oilers are better off with three strong centers, Draisaitl at center, McDavid at center and Nugent Hopkins at center, and spreading out the wealth that way. And McClellan has been pretty stubborn sticking with Draisaitl on the top line. It is their best. You put McDavid and Draisaitl, it's the best unit on the Oilers, the best duo, but you give up a lot. It means you have Letestu and Desharnais as your third and fourth line centers, and that's not going to win in the long term of the playoffs. So McClellan's adjustment there was really, it's something I'd wanted to see for a while, honestly, and so I'm happy when I see it. It makes me very glad, but I do also think that it worked. The Oilers were a much different team, and Draisaitl was far more assertive. He got in there on the forecheck on Cassian's goal and was part of the reason why Schlemko coughed up the puck there. So good adjustment by McClellan. Todd McClellan has been a coach since he was like, 10 years old. He's a career coach. He knows what he's doing. He is a very experienced coach. He did go through a lot of different situations losing in San Jose, and I think he's continued to learn from those experiences. He's a great teacher. He almost always says the right things after a game in terms of how the team performed, what they need to do. He keeps it positive. I like his manner, and I think he's been an excellent coach for the Oilers so far. Coaches are hired to be fired, so this is subject to change at a moment's notice. But he has been the right coach at the right time for the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, he was very well liked here. I mean, yeah, there's, you know, we could go through all his tenure. There's a lot of stuff there, but it's interesting. Two of those things you mentioned there sound very familiar. In 4-on-4 situations, it would drive me nuts sometimes. He would toss out like Torrey Mitchell and I don't know, some random fourth liner and be like, what are you doing? Like, this is where we need to showcase our skill. But that's totally, it sounds very familiar there when you describe that, because I've seen that more than a few times. And then there was a long debate here about Pavelski, top line Pavelski at center on third line. Very similar to what you're talking about there, where McClellan was very insistent on stacking the top two lines. as opposed to how much success he had where he had, you know, Thornton, Couture, Pavelski as the pivots down the middle. Both, I mean, both setups won, but one was deeper. And yeah, there was debate about that. There was, yeah, it sounds incredibly familiar. Like any Sharks fan would know that's a very, very, very familiar topic with us. Couple more things here. Other than, you know, like the Burns, Pavelski's, Couture's, have any Sharks players caught your attention in the series so far?
Well, Timo Meier has. You know, Brent Burns just was out of this world in game one, and the Oilers were not on him. He was just shredding the Oilers with his diagonal passing. Since then, the Oilers have been on him, and they haven't allowed that. The goalie, Jones, I don't know what's up. He's letting in. Is this a tendency where he has five holes a week? Because he should have had that McDavid shot. Cassian's shot last night was much more difficult because it was a backhand shot, and you don't know where that's going as the goalie. It could go anywhere. So a little more leeway on that one, but that's probably one you'd want him to have. But definitely the McDavid shot, I don't know how he muffed that. And that's Jones has not looked sharp. So I guess in a kind of a negative way, Jones has made an impression on me. Thought he would be better than this. As an Oilers fan, I'm glad he hasn't been. Hurdle was great. Is he on the top power play unit? I mean, if he's not, he should be.
Occasionally, but usually no.
He's a guy right now. I'd have him and Pavelski and probably Thornton, although Thornton, as the game went on, looked like he was slowing down and passing the puck, probably as the Novocaine wore off or whatever they shot into his leg. He started to play more poorly and was passing the puck behind people, but certainly Hurdle, Pavelski, Meier, Burns, and maybe Thornton on your power play. Like those are the guys that I've been impressed with.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, Hurdle's kind of in a make or break season where it's like this is his chance to step forward, which he was huge in game one. So excited to see that. Hurdle could be a very special player. Speaking of special players, I mean, I guess we have to talk about that guy. What's his name? Connor McDavid. Yeah, I know. I guess you probably saw a lot of Wayne Gretzky up close and personal since you were there since 1985, according to your bio there.
Yeah, I've been a fan since 1972, since the World Hockey Association. So,
having seen
108 years old,
having seen both, you know, the great one, and now seeing McDavid, I mean, what's that like? So people hate me for it. I do fanboy a little over Connor McDavid. That is phenomenal. I can't deny it.
He's such a different player than Gretzky. I mean, Gretzky, is there a player like Gretzky in the NHL right now? There isn't. We've seen McDavid reminds me of Bobby Orr at center. Just the ability to suddenly turn on unbelievable speed and get around guys. Pavel Bure is another. Harlamov. There's been a couple of Russian attackers who have had this. So there's a small group of players. McDavid is just so unbelievably fast and daring. I was talking to an Oilers insider the other day, and who compared him to, like, he's got all this skill, but then he crashes the net like Glenn Anderson used to, just utterly fearless going to the net. This series, interestingly, McDavid hasn't played that well. He hasn't been the story. And he really hasn't, by his standards, played that well. I mean, in terms of scoring chances, he's usually at even strength plus three scoring chances a game. He's been about plus one so far. So the Sharks have done an excellent job in containing him. And you have to give credit to, I think, Vlasic and Justin Braun for the defense they've been playing. And it's, you don't notice it very much, but they're doing something right. And so those are two Sharks who I haven't noticed, but I would say, man, those guys must be playing him well. The forwards are also getting on him. It's a team effort. They're getting on him as soon as he has the puck, not letting him wind up. But this is the other scary thing for the Sharks is that McDavid hasn't yet played his A game. He's going to. And when that happens, that's an Oilers, it's like guaranteed Oilers win night almost. So we're going to have one of those games before this playoff series is over. And you got to win every single other one of them. And that's how this is going to go for the Sharks to win. They've got to win all those other games.
Yeah, completely agree. If you watched a lot of the Sharks last year in the playoffs, a lot of guys disappeared mostly during series, you know, star players like Tarasenko, where suddenly they just weren't a factor. And it's a lot because they had Mark Edward Vlasic out there just on them constantly. And Justin Braun, you know, he's decent defender, but he's a perfect pairing for Vlasic and kind of, the, you know, complements him well. So yeah, that's a big part of why McDavid isn't like being McDavid right now is, yeah, Marco Vlasic, probably him and Melker Carlson are probably the two most underrated guys on the team. Like they don't get a lot of accolades for what they do, but they do a lot of really good underrated work.
Carlson has played well. I agree. Both of them have. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So one last question here. So I assume you're right near the arena, you know, Rogers Place there, right? If I'm in Edmonton going to a game, where should I go for a beer before the game?
You know, I'm the wrong guy to ask because I do work downtown and Rogers Place is downtown, but because I break down videotape of the game, or, you know, I PVR the games and in live, I'm breaking down the scoring chances, going over each scoring chance 10, 15 times. I don't go to the live games. So if you do come up, I could do some research, but or I could ask on Twitter and I'm sure I get a lot of responses right away, but that's something that I do not know.
I've noticed, Edmonton fans are very, very active on Twitter and such. Had some very, very good encounters and some very, you know, there's definitely a lot of passion there. And, you know, I get it. It's fans. I mean, there's plenty of Sharks fans who are like that too. So it's all good. So with that, I guess if you want to plug your stuff, your podcast, you know, where people can find you.
We're on iTunes. It's the Cult of Hockey podcast in the Cult of Hockey blog. At the Edmonton Journal. We do game grades for the Oilers players. And I also post on Twitter at D Staples, the scoring chances for the Oilers. So I don't break down who contributes to the Sharks chances or makes mistakes for the Sharks on chances against, but I do in my scoring chance breakdowns it's a Google Doc list who the shooter was and usually the main passer on every Sharks scoring chance pretty much. So that might be of interest to fans. Thanks awesome, for having me, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you joining us. And just to wrap here, a reminder to everyone who is listening, you can find this on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and all that fun stuff. Hit that subscribe button, check out links in the description, and check out tealtownusa.com. Thank you for joining me, David.
Thanks a lot.